We were considering the last time the idea that when God sets down what it is that His will shall do, or what He has purposed to do, we call that ordered in all things. The covenant of faith is holy, perfect, pure, heavenly, and firm. Firm breaks out into understanding what it means that it's ordered. Unshakable, like Hebrews says that he has vowed in such a way that it will not shake, it will not change. It is firm and it is settled and it is decreed. When we consider his decree and think about what that means, what is the decree of God in that particular way?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
What is a decree?
Whatever happens, he wants.
Okay, so whatever happens or what he wants, what his intention is, and the decrees of God are broken out into what? Basically in two things. And providence. Yes, where do we find that? Find that in the catechism. The decrees of God are set forth in those two ways, setting down what is firm and unshakable. Yet, we're talking about how the covenant of faith works, how it's worked out. There's a particular receptacle in which the covenant works or is worked out. What is the receptacle in which it works out? Bottle of milk has milk. The receptacle for the bottle of milk is what?
The cow.
Well, the milk comes from the cow. So let's say the decree comes from God.
Yeah.
Where's the milk stored?
Time.
Okay, so you've just jumped a little bit, but yes. If you have milk carton, there's milk in here. This is the receptacle, right? So the milk carton holds it for this idea. You've got time. And God's decree sets what is going to occur in that time. And every single part of that time, regardless of what it is set down in creation and providence, time being part of creation, insofar as that, we won't get too far into it, but insofar as that, every single moment, moment by moment, God is upholding that particular moment. And because God is upholding that particular moment is not dependent upon anything else, yes? It's dependent upon His decree to uphold it, which means that in every single moment, however long a moment is, God is recreating all things instantaneously every moment and upholding it. Which that in and of itself is a fun thought. We're not going to go there. We're just going to deal with creation and providence. The idea that the covenant of faith is set in this zone, and God has so ordered every single instantaneous moment of it and upholds it all. Right here is where the covenant of work started. Let's say right here is where the fall happened. Right here, we'll say this is where Noah is. Right here, well, this is where Abraham is. We go a little further. Moses is around here. David is around here. Jesus comes right here. We are here. We'll create the timeline in this way because we don't know how long it is. And then it ends right there. He upholds all of that. Can it be any other way? It cannot be any other way. This is going to be super profound. You ready? I didn't say this. Calvin said this. Watch my hand. See my hand? I got it flat on the pulpit. Watch this now. This is what Calvin said. Did you see that? Did you miss it? Let me do it again just in case you missed it. The reprobate and the wicked can't even do that unless God specifically decrees that such happen. Right? So everything in every way is set down in God's creation and providence to be unshakable. What word can we use to describe all of this stuff? Firm, unshakable, decree, creation, and providence in terms of the way that God oversees and does all of these things. Sovereign. Yes. And anybody know what's in verse 4 of Jude pertaining to that? See, this hour studying Jude, and we're going to get there. What do wicked, and think about what Jude is saying. What do wicked men who have crept into the world?
The church.
The church. Right, not the world. The church. What do they deny? Yes, they deny two things in particular. They deny God's sovereignty, and they deny, because of that, his lordship. That sets the stage for the rest of what Jude is going to tell the church, because he's not writing to the world. He's telling the church that wicked men have crept in and they don't believe this stuff. The covenant is ordered in all things. It is unshakable. We use the word immutable. What does immutable mean?
It
cannot change. Why can't it change?
God is.
Okay, you just jumped though from an act back to the actor, right? God doesn't change, so the things that he purposes don't change. Why is that? Because why?
So his will happens.
No, so his will happens? I couldn't hear you. Because he's perfect, and so everything that he sets down in his wisdom is perfect. Is it sort of perfect, mostly perfect? Lady took her three children, put them in the back seat of her car, drove the car into the lake, killed herself and the three children. Right? Can't lift a finger without God's ordination. Is that a bad thing?
The act or what?
Yeah.
Yeah, the act.
Yeah, the
bad. Heinous thing. Heinous, terrible thing. Yes? She judged for that?
Yes.
Yes. So, being holy, perfect, pure, heavenly, firm and unshakable in his decree within the timeline of creation and providence. Providence being what? What a providence. What is that?
It's by God's...
The actings out of...
The day.
So do we know what his decrees are?
Not until they happen.
Yeah. Okay, not until they happen. And if a turkey comes in the yard and hangs out in the backyard?
Several times a day.
And we see that, and we attribute that to the providence of God in some way. The Lord sets down moment by moment all of those things. Thus, in these particular spots, with these particular people, setting down the covenant of faith in that particular way has to be firm and unshakable. Because unless he ordains all of these things by decree, then particular things that he requires based on his word, which he is the actor, and so the action has to fulfill the things that the actor in that particular way, he who acts, It has to be fulfilled. So that the, for example, Judas is the son of perdition, that the scriptures might be fulfilled. So those things are ordained. The means have to happen in order for the ends to occur. God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, 1 Corinthians 14:33. So the internal constitution of what makes up this particular covenant of faith in time on God's part, he decrees the recovery of Christ's seed from sin and death to righteousness and life, that he might be their God. The blessings are perfectly suited to sinners' needs and restricted only to the elect, and Christ alone is the mediator through whom they receive them. Here's the world. God could come and destroy the whole planet because of sin and because of the fall. He doesn't do that. Instead, he saves some people out of this planet. But in the saving of it, let's say these are the reprobate, and those are the elect. He doesn't destroy it. Instead, he saves his people. He needs this container to make this happen. Isn't that good for the people on the other side of the planet?
Yes.
For these people here?
Yeah.
How is this good for the wicked?
Oh, okay. They measure up their sins, so no.
So not good?
Not good, no.
Not good?
No.
Okay. So here, the measure of sin, right? The sins of the Amorites are not yet full. Or Thessalonians, treasuring up wrath for the day of wrath, right? They're treasuring it up. There's a particular spot where that occurs. For these guys, it's awesome. For these guys, it's terrible. It always goes both ways. But the internal constitution of this covenant of faith on this side, this is going to be unbelief. There's an easy way to say this. Calvinism, and when I say that, I really mean what I say when I say it. I don't mean just the 5 points. I mean it, all of it. The gospel, hey, let's call it this. Augustinianism. All right, doesn't matter, either one. There's that. Here, let's just write this here, gospel. And then, under that, there are varying degrees of unbelief. That's what you get. You have it, and then varying degrees of unbelief. So in the covenant of faith, this is, on this side, varying degrees of unbelief, even though unbelief is unbelief, right? There's still various degrees of it. There's some that are more harsh against it than others. But under the covenant of faith, the blessings are perfectly suited to all of the things that the elect need in order to be saved through what Christ has done. Christ alone is the mediator through whom they receive them. And on man's part, how do they receive those benefits?
Faith.
Right? Faith.
Faith is the instrument.
Yes. The form of that covenant resides as a mutual engagement between God and his people, and all is framed with perfect symmetry. There's also an external dispensation, not dispensational, different word, dispensation, administration, meaning the same thing, okay? We're not going into dispensational. But God revealed it in degrees. He revealed the covenant of faith in degrees in this way. Adam had that much, and Noah had that much, and Abraham had that much, and Moses had this much, and David had this much. More of the same. Further. God revealed it in degrees, first only after Adam broke the first covenant, then gradually, dimly at first, right? Genesis 3:15, pretty dim. In Israel's youth, he dispensed it through types and ceremonies, but in her maturity, more spiritually and fully through Christ. The law having a shadow of good things to come, Hebrews 10:1, which is why we call all of that other stuff back there shadows and types of the thing to come. Christ appeared first in promise. And then?
Performance.
Then in figure, Noah, Abraham, the sacrifices in Leviticus, David, the spiritual king. Finally, then as the God-man in coming and dying and rising to secure eternal redemption. This is my beloved son, hear ye him, Matthew 17:5. The application of this internal constitution of the covenant of faith is set down in what we call the Ordo Salutis. We'll talk more about the Ordo Salutis, but keeping it simple, the order of salvation. How a person is saved. Unless a man is
born again.
Okay, wait. Have we talked about faith yet? No. Unless a man is born again, he cannot see, spiritually perceive, the kingdom of heaven. What comes first?
Birth.
Right? So, regeneration precedes faith in that particular way, which is what Jesus was explaining to Nicodemus. So, God applies this covenant in a due order. There's a particular order, it's nonchalant. It's not nonchalant, it's straightforward. He sets it down, it's already set, right? He offers it, he convinces them by his spirit of their misery in Adam and hope in Christ. He effectually calls them to faith, he adopts them as his children, he justifies them through Christ's righteousness, he grants communion with himself, and he glorifies them eternally. Whom he justified, them he also glorified, Romans 8:30. You start at the beginning, it goes through the whole line, you get to the end. We're going to use these words this time. Offer. Convinces. Effectually calls. Adopts. Justifies. Grants communion. And then glorifies them. Here. Sanctification could be placed there. So guy goes to church, he sits down, he hears the gospel stated, he is convinced it is true, the Spirit uses the word and changes his heart, so now he has the ability to not only be called versus effectually called. And so the Spirit changes him. He's effectually called. He's adopted into God's family. He's declared just by the Father through what Jesus does. He then has all kinds of sanctificating things happen to him. And then ultimately when he dies, he's glorified. What happens when a person, there's two guys, they both come, they both hear, same message, same everything. They continue to come to church. They both say that they believe, and one of them falls away.
Unless
the call wasn't effectual. It was in some external way
natural
to him in his natural mind. The application to Christ's seed always occurs with all of these things because God has perfectly ordered and arranged everything to meet its required end. We'll pause there.